do. Lower to the grave, tell you like it is to your face. She don't play. Every chick down for it all, know that she a boss. No competition, no loss. From the Midwest to the A, all them got you tuning in, no delay. Ooh, get you right every time. Keep you laughing on a dime. Tell you truth, no lies, so you can live your best life. Cover all topics, no limits. Got something for your mama and your children, no holding back. No gimmicks, coming on strong, get straight to business. Oh yeah.
What she wanna do?
Live life, live life.
She
live
what she wanna do.
Live life, live life.
She live what she wanna do.
Live life, live life.
She live what she wanna do.
Live life, live life, live life. Live life, live life.
Hey, it's your girl Autumn, and I welcome you back to the Lit Life Podcast, where I encourage you to live your life autonomously. So check this out. If you're watching like on Spotify or YouTube, y'all can already see that I got a special guest up in here. Special guest to the Lit Life Podcast. Everybody put your hands together or whatever. Put them up in the sky. I don't care what you do. But 12 Kyle of the 12 Kyle Podcast. Welcome
what up,
back.
What up? What up? Glad to be back. It's been a minute. What's happening?
It's been a while. It has been a while. And the funny thing is like, I reached out to you over a month ago to do this.
It's been that long?
It was about a month ago.
Okay.
And then, you know, the vid took me down, so I wasn't doing nothing. But I am on the road to trying to get back in the habit of getting my podcast out every month. Every week. It's not like I don't have shit to talk about. It's always something stupid going on.
Because you know, faithful listeners like me, we're constantly looking on Fridays like, yo, where's that?
And I appreciate you too. Like, I don't always like when people say like, it's just the listeners that bring them back, but I understand it 100% because I know that there are people like you who actually listen to my podcast and enjoy it. So I really appreciate you. Welcome to all of my returning listeners, to any new listeners. The very first thing I need y'all to do, or maybe the last thing, because I'm going to let them plug yourself at the end, is make sure that you follow 12 Kyle on all platforms. Make sure you listen to his podcast. It is definitely one of, if not my favorite podcast, to be honest.
Oh, Hercules.
You know, it ain't no shade to nobody else, but you know what I'm saying? I can't say that you're one that I listen to when I'm getting ready to listen to a podcast. I'll be like, let me see what 12 Kyle talking about. You know what I'm saying?
I appreciate it.
And y'all are going to see why, because we'll get into it in a second. We got this other shit we got to do first. You know, we got to tell folks to shut the fuck up. So, all right. It's everybody's favorite part of the show, the Shut the Fuck Up Award. It's that time where you can tell anybody, anything, an entity, a corporation, a rap star, a hater, whoever, to shut the fuck up. And it's always so much fun when I have a guest on the show that can give me one. So of course the guest gets to go first. Who are you telling to shut the fuck up?
I mean, mine is pretty simple. This person can get this award pretty much every day, every other day. 45. It is mind-boggling to me. We as a country really put this man into office. And I'm somebody who saw him and watched his quote unquote stardom rise as this real estate tycoon in the 80s to transform it into whatever he is now. And I mean, like, some of the stuff he just says is just stupid. I mean, like, he has four, not one, not two, not three, but four open cases, federal cases. And this man is still running, running for president.
He's still running, and he's getting the funding for it too.
Autumn, you know what I tell people all the time, and I know that you do this with this podcast, document this shit, because like literally your grandkids, your great grandkids, they're not going to believe you. They're not going to believe that you went through a global pandemic. They're not going to believe that you elected this fool, you know, at least once. I mean, I don't think he'll get elected again, but I didn't think he'd get elected the first time. So,
yeah, nobody did.
Donald J. Trump Shut the fuck up.
he's really a jackass.
Mine is always simple.
he is really something else.
And it's like he's trying to beat these cases, and I mean, like, he's not. And the thing about it is that at the time of this recording, his lead is so far in the party, he's going to get the nomination. So he ain't even got to show up to the debates.
Yeah, he'll get it. And what's really bad, like one of the worst parts about all of this, is that some people are literally going to vote for him because they got 2 stimulus checks.
That's it. That's it. And some will just vote just because, you know, just because they quote unquote tired of Biden or tired of this. And it's funny because, like, if you ask most of his base, if you will, and I'm not trying to make this political, but I mean, let's just be real. If you ask these people what does he run on? What is his policies? They can't tell you nothing.
Mm-mm. I mean, they're going to say make America great again. That's what they're going to say. And we got 2 stimulus checks. That's it. I'm serious.
Was it 2? I thought Joe Biden gave the stimulus checks. I could be wrong. I can't remember.
Was it him? Was it? No, I think it was during Trump. I think Trump was still in office.
I may have to look. I think it was Biden. I don't think he's stingy. You know what I'm saying? So
I think it was Trump. Just based off the fact that I feel like I've had like 3 people tell me this. Okay, like he was for how did they say it? Like he wanted to put money in our pockets to bring the economy back up. But it was all very political. Like it was all very, I'm gonna give folks this so when I get ready to run again, you know, or whatever, or when the election was coming up or whatever. Like it's right. Just y'all can remember this. So yeah, document it. That's always a good one, because it's what's crazy about him is when people come on here and say shut the fuck up to him, it's always for something different. There's so many different things you could tell that man shut the fuck up for.
So
my shut the fuck up probably goes to one of his friends. Like, I feel like at some level, these 2 idiots got to be like the best buds ever. And that goes to Lil Lon Lon.
Oh.
Who, first of all, then changed the whole fucking name of the app that we love to hate. You know what I'm saying? Which is Twitter. His mama named him Twitter. I'm calling him Twitter, Twitter type of deal.
Always gonna be Twitter.
You know what I'm saying? But it's kind of 2 shut the fuck ups. It's the word on the street is that he's thinking of a plan to charge everybody for Twitter. Now, I saw a tweet with I think it was like the original tweet that said it, and then like there were some context notes that says he never came out of his mouth and said that, but it was kind of talked about in some kind of interview or whatever. But even before that happened, I say probably about a week ago, I was thinking to myself, like, he's going to start charging for Twitter, like, especially since he's probably not getting, although we're seeing a lot more blue checks, he's probably not getting the amount of blue checks or the amount or people getting the blue checks and actually keeping them for him to get whatever type of money that he wants. Okay. So I 100% believe, even if it's just $1, even if it's like $3 or something, like I 100% believe that he's going to start charging for this app.
How do you think that's going to go?
I think that there's going to be people that do it, because that's my second shut the fuck up is for people who are saying that they're not going to pay. Just like they said they wasn't paying for no blue check.
But they paid.
But they pay for the blue check. And and honestly, the blue check makes sense if you have a following that you can generate the income from. Because why else are you, why else do you need it? To edit a tweet or to be able to post longer videos or to be able to type, have long ass paragraphs that every time I see, I'll be like, I'm not reading all that. I scroll right on past it. You're not really getting any engagement from me or people like me, you know what I'm saying? Right. So unless they have a platform for that, to where they're going to make money. You know, they know for a fact that right now, if I pay this, what is it, $11.99 or whatever it is a month, mm-hmm. it's like damn near a subscription for Netflix, that I'm going to get some money back off of it. So mm-hmm. I guess in that sense, it makes a little bit of sense. You can, if you're going to make something off of it. But aside from that, like, I just think people are just saying, you know, no, we're not going to pay for it, but they're going to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. There's always some.
There's always this. Some. So we'll see how
does it do that?
You muted yourself, but it's cool.
I didn't do it though. That's what's crazy. Like, I'm not doing anything. Let me just back up and not touch
it. It might be Peach.
So, right. Her hollering out here. She's like really hollering out there. A couple of things that I noticed about 12 Kyle's podcast when I started listening to it was it's similar to mine in the fact that you don't, when you listen to it, I don't care what episode you listen to, it's going to be relevant. It was relevant when he recorded it, and it's going to be relevant. Like, you literally can, you don't have to listen to it in any order. You don't have to, there's no like storyline here. When you turn it on, no matter what he's talking about, it's going to still hold true when you listen to it again in a couple of years or whatever. And that's kind of how I feel like my podcast is. But also, there are a few things that he talks about that I feel like people can learn something. And I say that because I have learned a lot about music in general listening to 12 Kyle's podcast. I always go back to Brown Sugar. I always go back to that. Like, yes. I had no idea that Brown Sugar by D'Angelo was about the good reefer. I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I always take that into consideration. So when he drops album reviews or just like paying homage to you know, certain artists and things like that, he on his R&B. He's on his R&B, but he's really, he's really on his hip hop. Like, and I've always loved hip hop, but not to the point where I feel like I could just tell you every single thing about hip hop. And I know you probably can't tell every single thing about hip hop, but you know a whole lot about hip hop. So this episode is going to be, I got some questions. I can't wait for questions today. You know what I'm saying?
I cannot wait.
It's going to be about the 50th anniversary of hip hop through the eyes of 12 Kyle. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what it's about to be right now. Now, I know he already recorded 50 years of hip hop, and he probably recorded it with some other folks too, but my shit going to be a little bit different, and that's cool. Like, we're going to do this. So I want to know, if there was someone on this earth who didn't have any idea what hip hop was or how it originated or anything like that, like if they were just completely clueless about hip hop, and you're talking to them and you're trying to have a conversation with them, how would you explain it?
Wow, that's a great question. You come in here with the Barbara Walters on the first the first damn question.
You know,
that's a great question.
I say Robin Roberts instead.
She's dope too. She's dope.
Yeah,
too.
You know.
I think I would, the best way I would explain it would say it's the streets. It's the feel, it's the impulse of the streets. That's where hip hop originated. It originated in the streets of the South Bronx in 1973. And hip hop told us, well, it was rap back then, but it told a story, and the stories that they were telling was about their environment, the people that were around, the things that was cool, the things that were deemed fresh or fly. And that's what it was. And it really evolved into something, you know, that I thought was beautiful. I started listening. For those of you guys listening and watching, I'm slightly older than Autumn. Autumn's in her 30s, right? She might be in her 20s. I'm 50, so I'm a little bit. I'm only like 6 months older than hip hop. But I think the thing is, like, it was something that kind of started growing, and it moved outside of New York City. And it was just something that, you know, at least for kids like me who grew up in South Carolina, we gravitated towards it because it was something new, it was something different, it was something fresh. But the thing about it was, Autumn was, even in its inception, we weren't sure how it was going to last, or if it would last. I mean, like, and I tell the story all the time, and it's worth repeating. Like, imagine going to school and you're in the fourth grade and you're listening to Run DMC, and you're coming home and you're wondering if rap is still going to be there when you get home. Like, because it wasn't on TV. It wasn't on the radio, at least not in my town. You know, so you might catch it on a mix, you know, late at night or something like that. So it wasn't readily available. And so, like, you would get your hands on tapes and stuff like that. So when you enter and you come across people who are a little bit older and you hear their reverence for the genre of hip hop, that's probably where it started, because it was something where they gravitated towards in their formative years, and they didn't know if it was going to stick around. Because I remember people distinctly telling us, oh, you know, that rap stuff, it'll be around for 2 years. It's going to leave just like disco and breaking. And we believed it. So, you know, for it to still be around and be the most dominant and most influential thing in the world, pretty much, is a testament of time. But yeah, I would say, to answer your question, long story, I would answer the question by saying it's the streets. It's the feel of the streets. And that's where it originated.
Do you know that I hate that disco is not really around anymore? Sidebar.
You know what? I'm actually old enough to remember disco. But, like, what I can remember about disco, when it left, like, at least it feels like, to me, looking back on it now, like, it was just an abrupt ending. Like, there was no...
Right. It didn't fade away. It wasn't just a transition.
Yeah, no kind of transition whatsoever.
I keep saying I'm going to have a disco party, because I'm going to tell you what, I wish I would have been, like, in my, you know, late teens when disco was a thing, because I just love it. But anyway, we ain't talking about disco. So I wanted to ask you, it's kind of a two part, but I'm just wondering, well, it's not, I'm wondering if these two questions are going to be the same answer. So the first question is, which is always a question when people are talking about hip hop. Mm-hmm. When did you fall in love with hip hop? Man. I'm gonna tell you the second question too, just in case, you know, now, just in case it's not the same or whatever. Okay. Then you could just go into it. The second question was, what's your most remembered moment in hip hop?
Probably. Well, let me answer the first question.
Or memorable moment.
I fell in love with hip hop. Like, this was like 84. So I'd have been like 11, going on 12. Here at Run-DMC. Run-DMC, like, they did it for me. Like, they were the epitome of cool. I mean, like, because again, I grew up in South Carolina. I grew up in this little place called Florence in South Carolina. And so, you know, we didn't have B-boys on the corner. We didn't have, you know, the gear and stuff like that. So when you saw stuff, so, like, picture this, like, growing up in South Carolina, so if you're in New York, everything is cool that's in New York, because, like, New York was the place to be. And so, like, you had these B-boys and these rappers that were from New York, and Run-DMC's, their look was just cool. And keep in mind, Autumn, we didn't have the internet, so I don't know how old Run was, but I wanted to be like Run.
Right, you know? Right.
I mean, Run could have, for all I know, Run could have been like 5 years older than me. And we didn't have the internet, so we had no way of knowing. But I mean, like, him, DMC and Jam Master Jay, they just looked so cool.
When it was the whole fit.
It was everything. It was everything. And then I just remember I wanted to get some Shell Toe Adidas. And when my mom finally got me some, I took the shoestrings. She was like, what are you doing? I was like, Mom, I was like, you supposed to have no laces in it. She was like, right. Some shoes.
She was like, I had Shell Toes too.
She was like, I paid $40 for those shoes. You better put some shoestrings in them. So
right.
That was the point where I fell in love. Like, it was them, seeing them. I think I saw them on, I don't know if it was MTV, but it was just like, it was almost like an out of body experience. You finally see somebody that looks like, because let's be real, for as big a fan as I am of Prince, I love Prince. Prince is my number one artist. And Michael Jackson, love Mike. But they didn't look like me. You know what I'm saying? I couldn't relate like that. I couldn't, and the girls couldn't relate to Whitney Houston. But when we saw Run DMC, and then subsequently when you saw LL, and you saw Queen Latifah, and then you saw
Salt-N-Pepa.
Yeah, I mean, like, so those were people and icons. We didn't call them icons then, but they were just figures that we could lock in on and be like, I want to be like that. I want to look like that. I want to rap like that. I want to dance like that. And so, like, that's where I fell in love. The second question, most memorable moment. Probably it was summer of, I think it was 87. My mom had taken us to New York. We had family in New York. And I remember I was walking down the street with my mom, and this guy, he was sitting in his car, and his car door was open. And he was playing this song, and the song was playing on the radio. And the song was, I didn't know it at the time, but the song was Eric B. Is President by Eric B. and Rakim. And I love that song. I mean, that's one of my favorite hip hop songs to this day. And I just remember, because I had never heard anything sound anything like that. I literally stopped, and my mom kept walking. And I turned around and I walked to the guy's car. And my mom didn't even realize, she got like halfway up the block before she realized I wasn't beside her anymore. And I was just standing there, just like bobbing my head. And then the guy on the radio said, that was Eric B. And that's all I heard. My mom, the next thing I hear my mom yelling. She's like, come here, boy. You know, what are you doing like that? So I ran to her, whatever. And so I went back home. So we go back down south. And I'm telling all my friends, I'm like, yo, man, this Eric B, man, he's dope. You know, because back then, if the DJ got top billing. So I thought, and me and my friends thought, Eric B was the rapper. I didn't know who Rakim was. I told my friends, like, I said, man, look, y'all got to hear this Eric B, man. It's Eric B, man. I heard the song on the radio when I was in New York. The song was dope. And my friends like, yeah, whatever, whatever. And then so, you know, of course, we're in the South, so the music and stuff gets to us 3 months later. And one of my boys was like, hey, man, I heard that, you heard that Eric B? I was like, man, I told you about that 3 months ago. And he was like, right. Oh, that's what you were talking about. It's like, oh, that's what you were talking about. But yeah, that's like my most memorable moment. I think that moment right there was like, it allowed me to, even in those, and I'll be honest, I don't know how long I stood there, probably 10, 15 seconds, but just to be able to hear something and have some, I've never had music like, and I grew up in a music household. So my mom and dad always played music in the house, but to have something literally stop me in my tracks, That was like my most memorable moment. It put me on a path to, you know, really fall in love with hip hop.
So I think mine is, they're kind of the same. So okay. I'll kind of like run them backwards. So like my most memorable moment was hearing LL Cool J's Runaway Girl. Like, I just remember, you know what I mean? Like, I just remember it like, just hearing it on the radio, and I'm like, and again, and it kind of goes to the references of like, you know, these girls that he's describing could easily be me,
easily. Right?
Could easily be me. And hearing that, I knew I had fallen in love with it in, look, you know, hindsight, when I went on ahead and got that tape and I recorded it off the radio.
You got to.
And then I recorded it on another tape over and over and over and over on both sides. So that when I listened to it, that had to be my defining moment, like in hip hop. And again, I'm not like a huge hip hop head, but that is like my most memorable moment. And also, again, just referencing like how, you know, it's always good. The representation is always good when it comes to music. My sister, who's 9 years older than me, and her best friend called themselves Salt and Pepper. They had the hair, like they had the, and I did too. I had the asymmetrical cut too when I got old enough.
Oh, we need pictures.
I'm gonna have to find some. But they had no, but they literally had like the coat, the jacket, they had, and I feel like they maybe did it one year for like Halloween, but like it was, they called themselves every day. They called themselves Salt and Pepper every day. It was this wild.
I love it.
I mean, the hair and everything, like they just did it. But you're absolutely right, because it was just good to see like the girls in the game, the JJ fads, like just talking about stuff. And you're like, that's neat. You know what I'm saying? And then you tried to learn all the words or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. I just loved it. So when do you think that thing, first of all, let's reference real quick. Why do you think they started calling it hip hop?
It's due to Grandmaster Caz, the world famous Grandmaster Caz. Grandmaster Caz was an MC. I shouldn't say was. He's still around. He is an MC, old school. But I mean, like, he's Caz, I want to say, is like, he came out like 80, 81, 82. I'll be honest, when Caz came out, I heard his name, but I didn't hear his music until later on. Mm. And there was a song where he said something about doing it to the hip hop or something like that. He used hip hop in a reference, and the song the song didn't even really blow up, but it was something that people just started saying, and it went from being rap, but it was rap for a long time. It was rap,
right?
Probably from the 70s. I don't even know if they called it rap in the 70s, because I was, you know, young. But when I heard Sugar Hill Gang in 79, 80, it was rap. The Message in 81, 82, that was Grandmaster Flash and Melly Mel and the Furious Five. It was rap then. It probably didn't really become like hip hop probably until I probably say late 80s, early 90s. So
I feel like it was longer than that, because I feel like the reference is used so much more now. But like, I'm just even thinking like mid 90s, I felt like they were still saying rap. Because, you know, gangster, it was gangster rap.
Yeah. And I mean, like, that was kind of a way to differentiate between gangster rap and hip hop. And so and then probably by the mid 90s, it really became like we started seeing it more as defined as not just music, but culture, because you had so much to deal with as far as like DJing and b-boying, fashion. Fashion really was always a part of hip hop. You know, because like I said, even going back to Run DMC with the, you know, with the fedora hats and Adidas and stuff like that. And then you had, you know, some of the quote unquote fly guys with the ballet suits and gaiters and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I personally would never wear anything like that. But, you know, the pimp culture was also big. Like, and then we moved into the mid 80s and, you know, just different gear, like you mentioned, Salt and Pepper, what they were wearing. And then I remember the African medallion. You may not remember that African medallion era.
Come on now, where you just had to have one.
Yep, you had to have one. And then
yes.
You know, you went from that to the, then you went from that to the, you know, chain. Of course, gold chains were always big, but then, you know, in the mid 90s, you know, you got platinum. You know what I'm saying? So it was. And so much stuff in between, but yeah, fashion. But I think
also the style of the chain, because it used to be the big ropes, and then it went to like a herringbone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like that Cuban link.
So bad.
Oh, yep. I got one. I have finally got one too. It was real too. I wanted one.
When I saw Tupac in the video, I wanted one just like that. I was like, man, I want me a herringbone. But them herringbones like $300. I was like, man, I ain't got $300 to buy one no damn herringbone. Tupac, I'm like, Tupac's a millionaire. At least I thought he was. So
you thought he was, right? I had another question that popped in my head, and I don't even remember what it was. So, anyways, I'll go on to this next question. So, when do you think? Oh, here is the other question. You mentioned that hip hop started on the East Coast, up in New York, right?
Uh-huh.
Northeast, whatever. How did it branch out after that? Like, what area do you think became like hip hop saturated after New York?
Really everywhere, because hip hop or rap at the time, honestly, Autumn, it spread like crack. It really did, because again, this was something that was different. And everybody wanted, at least the streets did, want a piece of it because it was so different from R&B. I mean, like, you couldn't compare LL to the Commodores. You know, you couldn't compare Run DMC to, you know, Confunction, you know.
Right.
So it spread like crack. I would say, like, because we didn't have social media, there's really no way of knowing, like, which areas kind of set off. But I think the music really went from New York and just really kind of branched out. If you follow hip hop's timeline, as far as success, you know, the next wave, once it left New York, the next wave went to like Philly. And then you had rumblings down in Miami, Houston with the Ghetto Boys, Miami Luke, and then out west with Eazy-E, Too Short. So it's really kind of hard to pinpoint and say that which area really took off, but they all kind of, I'd probably say around 86, 87, 88, those 3 years right there were pivotal because that's what we all call the start of the golden era of hip hop. And even something like trying to figure out what years actually make up the golden era. You can ask 10 people and they'll give you 10 different things. Some people will say it started from that. Yeah, started from that point in time. Some people say it went into the 90s, into the late 90s. But it really branched out. It really branched out. But we started hearing, like, I remember buying tapes. Like, I bought Eazy-E in 88. Mm-hmm. Eazy-E's debut album in 88. By then, I was listening to King T, 7A3, and those are all West Coast groups. So, and what's funny, Autumn, is that I could get my hands on a Too Short tape who was out west quicker than I could Curtis Blow or Slick Rick tape that was in New York. And I mean, geographically, I'm closer to New York in South Carolina, right. But for whatever reason, the record stores that I used to go to, like, they just had, you know, West Coast stuff. So that's how we got it. And one of my boys found Eazy-E. And he put me on to it and changed my life. I mean, I had never heard anything like that before.
Man. So do you have a favorite geographical era? Like, or did you have one back then as opposed to now? Like, do you think it's changed or do you have one at all? Have you ever had like a favorite area of where rap music is produced?
Mm-hmm. Great question. No, I've never had a specific area that I've liked more than the other. The reason being is because growing up in South Carolina, there were no rappers from South Carolina. And as far as I know, there probably still isn't any rappers from South Carolina. So,
wait, you got, oh no, that was North Carolina.
Right. So, so we didn't have any representation. So the cool part about it, Autumn, was that we weren't affiliated with anybody. So we just gravitated to whatever was dope. And see, like, mm-hmm. back then, like, nobody didn't care. In 88, I didn't care that Eazy-E was from Compton. I didn't care that Slick Rick was from London. I didn't care that Kane was from Brooklyn. And I mean, like, unless you know your geography, you know, you didn't know the difference between Compton and LA, you know.
So
none of that stuff really mattered. I mean, like, we really were just on dope shit. That was it. If your shit was dope, we were bumping it. If you were a girl and you were dope, we were bumping it. And I mean, like, I remember hearing, you know, Queen Latifah and MC Light buying their tapes, and like, they were better than a lot of dudes. And so, like, even if you thought that you could step to Queen Latifah was known for tearing dudes up. MC Light the same way. I mean, because they had to come up, and there were dudes around them. Nobody put them on just because of how they looked or what they did sexually or anything like that. Like, that era was really, you had to be original. A couple of things. You had to be original. Mm-hmm. You couldn't copy nobody, which we used to call biting. You couldn't bite.
Right, right.
And you had to be dope. I mean, like, and I don't want to make it sound like everybody was like a platinum selling artist or anything like that when they came out. But like, just as fans, we appreciated the dopeness. And like, if you weren't dope, we was going to call you out or we wasn't going to listen to your shit.
Right.
So no, I didn't have any particular ties, but I will say this much, like, the waves that came through, I rode those waves. So when Death Row came through in 92, 93, 94, that West Coast wave was crazy. And people say what they want about it, but Death Row had rap in a stranglehold. Then the East Coast kind of quote unquote came back. Nas came out. Then you had Biggie, and then subsequently Wu-Tang, and of course Jay-Z, and the East Coast quote unquote came back, and then the South started bubbling. I remember I first moved to Atlanta in 97, and when I turned on the radio, they had just gotten this hip hop station here, and I just moved here out of college, and the first thing I heard was Master P. And Master P, when I tell you, was on the radio every single hour. If it wasn't him, it was somebody else from No Limit. And then subsequently after that, it was Hot Boys. And so the South really started bubbling. And then you saw, or you could kind of feel as you moved into the 2000s, the rise of the South. And the South really just took over. I remember really falling for Outkast, because Outkast, when it came out in 94, this was the first time that I saw some dudes that looked like me. We were about the same age. They rhymed. They could rhyme their ass off. They rhymed like they was from New York. But they were Southern and country, and they was cool as hell. And it's and then having moved here, you could see them dudes anywhere. It was nothing to be in Lenox Mall and just see Andre just walking around. And no security guards, no nothing. I mean, so it was... Though that movement of the South really kind of took over, and you can make a case that Atlanta has been the epicenter of hip hop probably for the last 15, 20 years.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. And I know that I listen to a lot more hip hop now than I did back then. And what I noticed was I was a heavy, heavy fan of West Coast artists. Of course Tupac, but Warren G.
Cold ass album.
I listen to it probably a couple times a month.
That's a cold. People sleep. That's a
from
cold
start
ass
album. Start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
Too Short.
Mm.
NWA.
Mm-hmm.
I just even later on when YG came along.
Okay.
I was upset at myself for not really knowing who Nipsey was when he passed away. So I didn't know who he was. I started hearing about him, and I went and listened to him. Amazing. I'm like, I missed out on this. I was missing out. So I listened to Nipsey. So I think to this day, I'm still I think, well, okay. The West Coast, and I have a playlist. It's called Midwest in parentheses vibes. So it's Midwest, and because I'm from Ohio. Okay. So I was always on my phone, right. You know what I'm saying? Anybody that was just kind of in that area. I had a Chicago Twista, and
Twista
used to be a huge Kanye fan.
Did you get down with Common?
A little bit, not a whole lot. I liked his cadence and how calm he always was when he, but it didn't, it wasn't so. Really nothing that really caught me like that.
Fair enough.
But I realized that, but I also, like you said, runner ups for real was No Limit and Cash Money when they came out. No Limit and Cash Money, to this day. It's just huge. And the fact that all of these people are literally right now today selling out.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings me to my next question. Where do you think, or do you think there was a shift in hip hop? I feel like there was a huge shift, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like it went from, it kind of evolved. It was at first it was kind of evolving.
Mm-hmm.
It's still storytelling, but it was a little more conscious. It went from like being conscious to being, you know what? We're angry and we sick of this shit. Fuck the police. To a little bit of gang banging. okay, y'all, we all in the same gang.
Yep.
I also used to listen to that Blood of the Crips album. I'm not even going to sit up here and hold you. I literally got a couple of songs on the playlist. I'm not even going to sit up here and hold
you. The Bloods and the Crips.
The Bloods and the Crips. Oh, but all of those were just so like deep storytelling for me. Then I feel like it kind of shifted to more of, it was still storytelling, but more of a money, sex, money, drugs type of deal. When do you think that shift happened? Or do you feel like it happened that way?
I feel like, and I'm gonna try to make this long answer short as possible. I think that there were several shifts. The first shift probably came from the time frame of the early 80s into the mid 80s, because even if you look at like Melly Mel and the Furious Five, if you look at them, like they were rapping, you know, "Don't push me cause I'm close right to the edge," you know, and then they were dressed. Some would say like, you know, androgynous, right. I guess, you know, they had feathers and all kind of ruffled and shit like that on the clothes.
They was cold with it. That's how they dressed it in. They was ice cold with that shit.
That's how they did it. But then here comes Run DMC and LL, and they are B-boys. They are street dudes, you know, Jam Master Jay. Yeah, exactly. Jam Master Jay always talked about how he dressed like that. And because Run and DMC didn't dress like that, but he was, because Jay was from the streets. And so, you know, so then LL and that era came through. And then there was a shift, like you mentioned earlier, a little social consciousness with your Public Enemies.
Oh, I love
De La Soul. Same here. De La Soul, Tribe, yes. Jungle Brothers. You know, where it was like, okay, well, we're gonna fight the power. We're not gonna take the shit that y'all doing to us, whatever, whatever. Fuck the police, NWA. And then as you kind of transition from the late 80s into the 90s, early 90s, there was a kind of split, because the West got a little bit more tougher. Because like you mentioned, NWA, you know, they were talking about gang culture, talking about a lot of stuff that we only heard about or saw, you know, and then we were introduced via movies like, you know, Boys in the Hood or straight up Menace to Society. So then you had that transition, and then there was another transition back to the East, where it was a little bit more tougher, a little bit more rough, a little bit more edgier as far as the music was concerned. You had groups like Wu-Tang and Biggie, and then
DMX.
DMX, and then you had, you know, Jay, Nas, that era of MCs. And then but the biggest shift, I think, probably came really right around that time in the early to mid 90s, because money became involved. That's probably the biggest shift that caused everything, because when Run DMC came out, people like them, Heavy D and the Boys, they just wanted to hear that music on the radio. That was it. Like if you could get your shit on the radio and somebody could say, "I heard your song on the radio," that was the props was all that you needed. Nobody cared about touring. Nobody cared about the contracts, and you know, most of them signed bad contracts, but it was what it was. Because again, nobody thought that hip hop was going to be around as long as it was. And so it shifted really when the money came in. And then you started seeing, you know, people like you mentioned, like Cash Money getting distribution deals, Rockefeller, you know, they started getting these distribution deals. And so much money became involved that the money got bigger, the originality and lyricism got less. And so,
because that was, you know, their stories, and their stories were all the same at that point.
Yep, they were all the same. And then you had another shift where the music industry, and they still haven't figured it out, the music industry got caught up with the what I call secondary marketing, wherein websites like LimeWire, Kazaa, where we could get music for free. And we as fans was like, shit, let's, you know, bring it on. I mean, because here's the thing. If I could tap into your computer, Autumn, and I could get DMX's new album without having to go to the store and pay $12, bet, I'm going to do that.
I mean, it's going to take 12 hours.
Of course, dial up, you know, but if you had a T1, I could download that joint in like 20 minutes. So, you know, so all of that stuff happened, and the music industry never caught up with that shift as far as, you know, fans honestly got used to getting music for free. Let's just be honest. And, you know, even now, you know, through streaming or whatever, like, and I still couldn't tell you how much. If you told me Drake streamed 15 million, if his song streamed 15 million times, I don't know how much 15 million streams is. You know, it might be a penny. I don't know.
Right.
But long story short, there were several shifts, but I think the biggest shift happened. And honestly, hip hop is still shifting. I'm not sure what this next shift looks like. But it's really incumbent upon the people that are in hip hop now to make sure that it shifts in the right direction, because it's never been as big or as popular as profitable, but you know, that comes at a cost. And like, you know, for every Rhapsody, there's a Sexy Red, you know,
absolutely.
And Nicki, and you know, and that's another thing too. Like, I think people don't, especially when we look back at 50 years of hip hop, the constant has been women. You know, men rap to impress women.
Right.
You know, and then for what it's worth, when the 90s came around, you know, women became the bane of the rap song. You know, it was bitches and hoes, you know, and not to say the bitches and hoes didn't exist in the 30s, because they did.
Absolutely.
But you know, but I mean, like, you know, that was constantly on repeat, and so the generation beneath them, that's what they came up on. And so, like, I'm interested, Autumn, and I'm not really sure what the next 50 is going to look like. I mean, of course, we're going to be around for the next 50.
Facts.
I'm not sure, because like I'm concerned, you know, because some of the stuff that I hear now, there's really not a lot of originality. And I think the thing is, like, another thing too, like, we came up in an era, Autumn, where you really, when it came to hip hop, you had to pay your dues before you could ever get on stage, before you could ever get on the radio, before you could ever get a record deal. Now, shit, man, you can make a song right now.
Right. I'm going to, too. I promise you. I've been working on it. I promise you. I'm going to drop me some bars. I don't give a damn. That's on my bucket list.
That's it.
Upload it, and now you're an artist.
That's it. And that's it. You don't have to shop your record deal. You don't have to do nothing. You can go get quote unquote a record deal based on your IG followers. You know, how many people have streamed your song, how many impressions you have on Instagram and YouTube. So the game is different. It's way different from how it was. So, you know, that part of it concerns me. But I mean, like, I always revert back to the stuff that we came up on.
Well, I got two more questions for you.
Okay.
The next question is, we've seen, and I was kind of talking about this a little bit earlier. So we've seen, especially over the past year, as they were ramping up to celebrate the 50th anniversary of hip hop, we've seen a lot of old school artists, or like, you know, like 90s, or, you know, 80s, 90s, 2000s artists that are literally like selling out stadiums. Like, they're literally putting on, and actually, honestly, since I've been here, and I've been here 8 years, I've seen just about all people that I never thought I would see. You see what I'm saying? Like Ken Play, and you know, like, just like, literally, like, who thought I would be able to see Ken Play like today? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that being said, with all of the celebrations going on, with all of the reunion tours, you know, or not even reunion tours, but with all of the celebrations that were dedicated to the 50 years of hip hop, What one artist do you feel like has been missing? Like, who did they not put on one of these big shows, like, you know, whatever, BET or whatever, that they should have?
That's a good question, because I think, honestly, I think most of the artists got a chance to hit the stage at some point in time this year. Now, what we saw on tour and what we saw at BET and the Grammys, now those are two different things, because the Grammys,
and maybe that's what I want to focus on. Okay. the big screen, like the Grammys, the even like, because I don't even know, did they do a tribute with the VMAs? I don't know. BET sure. Awards, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Like, who do you feel like, or even like the one, but I know tours are different, but you know, the one, the biggest tour that, mm-hmm. you know, like LL Cool J and all them was on, mm-hmm. like even that one, like, because I think that's probably the only one that would be comparable to like the award shows. Who do you feel like, do you feel like anybody was left out? Like anybody that you could think of? I have one person that's been like tearing me up to not have seen them in.
Okay, you tell me, because I can't think of anybody that I haven't seen. Tell me who you got in mind.
Hammer. I am Hammer. They could be in the mix.
You know what? Case closed. I agree. I don't know if, like, he wasn't asked, but he should have been on somebody's stage.
I don't think he was, because, you know, I follow him on Twitter.
Okay.
And I see the tweets and stuff a lot, you know, and a lot of people saying like he should have been on there. I don't think he said nobody asked him, but mm-hmm. it wouldn't make any sense for him not to if they did, right? And people, you know, people on social media can just be so stupid and ignorant. So, you know, some people, they be going back and forth with them. But, you know, I think one person said something like, you know, I hate that you weren't acknowledged during, you know, any of the big award shows and this, that, and the other. And that man said, it's cool. The acknowledgement for me came knowing that 50 million people, or however the hell many, drove to the store and mm-hmm. bought my music. He was like, that's what it, and I was just like, damn, that's like such a good answer. Because, but he was such a cultural icon, mm-hmm. still mm-hmm. is. Yeah, like, I mean, like his whole entire story, the whole package that is MC Hammer. Like, he's the artist that a lot of people think their faves are, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, he really did that shit, and it still ain't really, I mean, come on, MC Hammer, he had pants and a cartoon
and a cereal
and a doll. Like, come on, like, he was just so fucking dope.
Yeah. I have a podcast that I'm going to do. I'm not sure. I'll probably get it. I'm going to try to get it in before the end of the year. But it's going to be a definitely Hammer appreciation podcast, because Hammer, what people fail to understand, like, if you didn't live through that time, Hammer was blasted. People came at mm-hmm. Hammer because they thought he was quote unquote selling out.
Yep.
And he was making money at a time where, you know, the quote unquote real ones in hip hop were, man, we ain't trying to make no money, man. We trying to keep it real. We trying to keep it street. And that didn't make any sense. And then, like, you fast forward like three, four years later, everybody's trying to get money. If you listen to that album, and like you said, when I tell you everybody bought that album, I don't care.
Everybody.
People wanted it. They had jokes. They tried to clown Hammer. Everybody and their mama had that album.
Yeah.
And I remember I bought the tape twice, because my tape popped and I had to go get it again.
And so I'm gonna definitely do a post, a piece on Hammer, because like, I don't think he was really acknowledged for what he did, and he opened a lot of doors. Mm. Hammer got, he got rap on MTV. Rap wasn't on MTV like that.
Facts.
I mean, yeah, of course, we subsequently had MTV, Yo MTV Raps, but like, I mean, even for him to get that sample from Rick James, and for him to flip that and bring it into what it was. And I mean, the thing about it is, and what you mentioned, and I hadn't even given any thought until you said that, but there's nobody that shouldn't have been on the stage this summer besides Hammer. Hammer gave you a show.
I mean, a whole show.
Like all these other rappers grabbing his nuts and stuff like that. I mean, Hammer gave you a show.
And we still had the breath in his body.
People on stage, you had a band, you had, and Hammer was getting it. So I wish he should have been on tour with somebody or acknowledged. I hope and pray that somebody at least reached out to him, and maybe he didn't feel like doing it or whatever like that. But he's definitely he was really ahead of his time.
He really was. I mean, he had when you talked the things that you talked about earlier, like he was original.
Microphone check, 1, 2.
Can you hear me now? Oh,
I got you. Now,
all right.
I'd have made your editing harder now.
That's all right. If it would have only lasted like 30 seconds, I would have just left it in. But it's cool. I don't know where it's at. But okay, so we was talking about Hammer.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like he was very original.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't anybody dancing like him back then. There was nobody.
Nobody was dancing, Autumn. They were and too cool to dance.
Right. And as a matter of fact, he had a whole dancing ass crew. It was insane. Crew. Like his shows, like I saw a clip of maybe the Grammys or something, whatever he was on at, whatever. And I was just like, this man was like, he was a beast with it. And I feel like he has a place, and I just didn't understand why I didn't see him at least once on one of these shows. Like it made zero sense to me at all. So
I hadn't thought about it until you said it.
But I'll be looking forward to your podcast about it. Last question.
Mm-hmm.
Who is your favorite hip hop artist? I know that. Wow. See, and like now, usually when we do things like this, y'all, I don't know if y'all have ever heard me and 12 Kyle together, or me, 12 Kyle, and J Bug together, and we always be trying to rank some damn music. And it's usually easiest for Kyle. Yes. But I figured this would not be as cut and dry.
You know what? You know why it is? Because like I have favorites for different. I don't know if I have a single favorite, but I have favorites for different reasons. But to answer the question, I'll say Nas. That doesn't mean he's the best. He's in my top five. But I'd say my favorite artist is probably Nas.
Do you know if you had to guess, do you know who mine would be?
Damn, I don't know, Autumn. You kind of thugged out, man. Your favorite artist might be DMX.
This definitely Thug Life Tupac.
Oh, okay. I was like,
definitely Tupac.
Yeah. And you know what? It's funny because like, even if you go back and like I was listening like to Tupacalypse now a couple of weeks ago, and like Tupac is the epitome of hip hop, and he is so many different things to so many different people. Like we just passed the anniversary of his death, and like it's really hard to explain who Tupac was because he was so many people, and like if you look at those first couple of albums, like he was on something totally different. I mean, like he was Black Power all the way through. The Me Against the World album is probably my favorite album, but then that Death Row run that he had, and you know what's crazy, Autumn, when you think about it. Pac only was out for like 4 years, maybe five.
It seemed like so much longer than that.
But when I tell you, he had music in the palm of his hand. Oh my gosh, man. And when he passed, and
The thing was from, because I watched, did you watch the Hulu documentary?
It's on my list to watch. I'm so far behind on my list, but I got it. Okay, I will.
And I'll only say this because I don't want to spoil it, but what I feel like I learned from the documentary, a part of that was with the whole death row thing. Like, he did it, and he kind of did what they wanted them to do. I mean, he was still, he that's when he was probably most like explosive. So he and that, which was him, like at any moment he could just pop off. But I believe, like, especially after watching that, and again, that's why I don't want to give too much away. I feel like when he was getting ready to, because you know it was always been said that he wanted his own record.
He
wanted to get off.
He was getting
and when he was getting ready to, I think that he was gonna kind of go back to, and it probably not all extremely conscious as he was, you know, like speaking, like he was that person. He never changed, is what I'm saying. And I think that he was gonna put a little bit more of himself aside from all of the explosive stuff back into his music. And just listening back to him, just like with where did I hear that at? I think I put it on Instagram put it in my Instagram stories today, when he was like sitting in a classroom and he was rapping Keep Your Head Up. Like, just that first verse is a whole lot. It's like he knew what was gonna happen. Like everything in that verse, it just it shakes me every time I hear it, because it's like, oh my God, these things really happened.
Right.
Like, he knew it. He knew it, and he just wanted us to be good. And when I say us, I mean Black people.
Yes. Yes. That's it.
He just want he all he wanted, and that's why he was always so, because he couldn't figure out how to get us there. And so, and that's why I loved him so much. And again, like, this is a new, it's not a newfound appreciation for him, but it's me knowing that this is my favorite. This has always been my favorite hip hop artist. Like, I've listened to many, and at one point in time I said it was Jay-Z, and it's weird to me, for me to have said that, when I still to this day, on again on a weekly, probably a few times a week, I have a Tupac playlist that I listen to. I have a Jay-Z playlist that I listen to as well, but not nearly as frequently as I listen to the Tupac one. And it's been like this for years, to be honest. So it's undisputable for me. Like, he's my favorite, and like you, like, I have, you know, different favorites for different reasons, you know what I mean? Like, but if I had to choose one, it's definitely gonna be him.
One, yeah. So. I know we gotta wrap, so I got a question for you. Where hip hop is now, with artists like Sexy Red, and you know, the I don't want to disparage it, but it's
I know what you
twerk rap. I don't know what you call it. Like,
they call it
how does
coochie rap or something like that?
Oh wow! I was gonna say stripper rap. How does And I know that your answer now might be a little bit different, probably, from what it would have been, you know, 20 years ago or whatever. How do you think that resonates with Black women of today? Or does it resonate?
Okay. Speaking, this is me speaking as a, I'm just going to say it, 44-year-old. It's Obama year. It's Obama year. I'm going to put it out there. Me speaking as a 44-year-old Black woman who has had an appreciation for rap music for a long time. So, again, dating back to your MC Lights, your Queen Latifahs, your JJ Fadge, your, you know, Conscious Daughters, Lady of Rage, Trina, you know, then, you know, you get to Trina. When we got to Trina, I still to this day cannot believe how much I enjoyed her music. And I think it's pure entertainment. Yeah. I don't know if people my age, if women my age, Black women my age, truly feels like, or I know that there are some. I know that there are some. But like, I don't think that we're just out here city girling it up. But it's entertaining.
Right.
It's entertaining. Like, it's entertaining. It's catchy. You know, any and women my age, we still like to dance. So I'm not really trying to listen to, you know, this slow whatever type of rap depressing that be going on, to be honest. And again, that's not really like a blow to them, because, you know, they're, again, what did we say, they're telling their stories. But that's not really when I think of rap music, you know, I think about Back That Ass Up. I think about, you know, Hot Boys. I think about Hootie Hoo. I think, you know what I'm saying? I think about the stuff that we were in the club dancing
to.
I remember a tweet that came out that said, damn, you know, I wish I would have been of age to hear this going out for 99 2000 in the club. I said, baby, it would have changed your life. Because I don't care what was going on, everybody, men, women, children, we're going to dance to Back That Ass Up. So I think that it resonates in the sense of entertainment.
Okay.
I don't know if you know this, but I am a huge Megan Thee Stallion fan. I still can't believe it, Kyle. Like, I've been a fan of hers probably 3 years or so, you know what I mean? And I honestly, you know, just like I couldn't believe how big of a fan I was of Trina's, that I still am, of Trina's. Like, I cannot believe how much I enjoy this girl popping off. But one thing about Meg is, if you really listen to her music, it's really not always about cashing out on the cat. That's not what it is.
Okay.
First of all, she don't have to. You see what I'm saying? Like, it's not something that she has to do. She says these things, and I just feel like it's just a form of entertainment. That's how I feel. Like, it's, again, it's catchy, and she's talking her shit. She can actually rap. She can actually freestyle. Like, she's a rapper for real. you can't say that about a lot of these, male or female.
This is true.
You can't say that about them. You know what I mean? Even, you know, people compare, you know, since her and Cardi are on songs together, which I'm with it. You know what I'm saying? I like Cardi B because she don't give a damn. That's one reason why I really like her. She has, you know, catchy, whatever. But if you putting both of them together, in my opinion, they complement each other off of opposites. So, like, the new video that came out, Bongos, damn it, Cardi B got up there and she showed every bit of dancing skill. And I feel like strippers, this ain't something they could just go out there and do. Like, they have to practice this stuff. It's like a form of art. And Cardi got that shit down pat. Okay. Is it tough sometimes for her to catch a cadence? Absolutely. Does it depend on who's writing for her? Absolutely. Some days it does. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just does. Like, you know, and Meg has writers too, but Meg writes a lot of her music herself. All, like, if you look at her, the, her fucking credits and shit, a lot mm-hmm. of that, a lot of the pen is hers. Okay. So, but she, but her, her, the cadence is perfect. And the things that she says, like some of the bars, you just be like, did you really just say that? Like, I just right. be like, bars like that now. Like that means like some of the things I just can't believe that that come out her, and I can't, I'm trying to think of stuff off the top of my head, but I don't think it's anything that's like completely influential, like, oh, I'm about to go out here and just take all this nigga money for some coups. Like, I don't think that that's what it is, because even to me, you know, again, being, I was probably what, very early 20s when Trina mm-hmm. and Kaya, you know, dropped it, Lil mm-hmm. Kim, all of them, like,
Foxy.
I even back then, it wasn't influential for me. It wasn't, mm-hmm. Oh, this is what I need to do. And right. I knew, and to this day, still know about, I'm going to give myself a good 96% of that damn Baddest Bitch. If it come on, I could probably spit every single word, okay? It was just because I liked the song. It just, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? So I don't think, but a lot of it, I'm going to say a lot of it. I'm just going to be real. It's trash. But
well,
I,
you know,
I
feel, it's not even, I don't even think it's about being trash. I think, I guess my concern is, you know, Pound Town, Booty Hole Brown. I mean, like, and yeah, you're right. That's catchy.
I don't even but think I heard the song, but I know what you're talking about.
I heard it. I didn't mean to hear it, but I heard
right.
it.
Right. I don't even think I.
I think the problem is that it, well, I don't want to say problem. I think it's a short shelf life, but that's no different from somebody rapping about killing 1,000 people and selling
exactly
so many
what
drugs.
I was about to say.
And, but I just think, like, for somebody like that, like, you, if that's your MO, okay, cool. But you got to understand, like, there's always going to be somebody with a better body. There's always going to be somebody that's younger. There's always going to be somebody that's, you know, is going to say something that you're not saying. Mm-hmm. And I just think,
and it's
like,
the same with the money and stuff. The money yeah, culture. Yeah, it's always going to be somebody that's richer than you. It's always going to, you know.
And if that's your thing, then that's cool. But it just, it has a very short shelf life. Mm-hmm. And I just think, like, you know, now being a father of a teenage daughter, you know, now I'm like, damn, you know, how do I mean we're gonna talk about it, because I mean, like, it's not something I could hide and be like, no, you can't listen to that, because her friends gonna be listening to it if they ain't listening to it already, you know what I'm saying? So right. And I think, you know, you have to explain, like you said, it's entertainment, comes with context, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I don't know who she is, I don't know who Flo Milli is, who they are as people, mm-hmm. but I know that they have to put on, just like anybody else, they have to put on a persona and go out and mm-hmm. be whoever they are for entertainment. Mm-hmm. And it's for those who want to be entertained. But I always like to get women's perspectives, because I think, like, that voice matters, because, like, I know men will look at it through the lens of sexuality
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
being sexual. So if you twerking, they ain't caring about what you saying. They just looking at you twerk. So mm-hmm. after a while, you know, what you say becomes irrelevant. So if somebody like Sexy Red, if you're not giving a man that type of song for a whole album, he's not interested. After like the first album, he's done. You know, he don't want to, mm-hmm. they off you, they on to the next one. And so, and mm-hmm. there will be a next one. So mm-hmm. I always like to get the perspective of women, because I think you guys will, one, push, you push the music, but you also uphold it, and you can make or break that music. Because if you ain't, like you mentioned, if you wasn't feeling Trina, you wasn't feeling her.
You weren't feeling her.
You wasn't feeling her, but you knew that Trina had more than just, you know, I'm the baddest bitch, because Trina could rap, and she did rap on that album, you know. Mm-hmm. And she, I mean, her first song, she came out, she was rapping with Trick, you know. Mm-hmm. She was talking shit, but she was rapping. Yep. So,
yep.
But I wanted to get your perspective on that, because I think it's important that, you know, particularly as hip hop moves forward, we have to hear what women think and how they feel about the music that's being disseminated, because they're the purchasers. They push it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you go to concerts, you know, and I know it's a different genre, but those Beyonce concerts where the tickets were, you know, $8,000, it wasn't dudes, you know what I'm saying, that was buying them tickets. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, y'all, and I know you talked about, you know, concerts that you went to this summer and stuff like that. I mean, like, it's always women that are pushing that. And the same goes for hip hop. Even the most gangsterous, mm-hmm. thugged out music, you know, women really push as far as the ticket sales and stuff like that and purchasing the music. So, you know, I think it's important that we, particularly as we move forward, if we want hip hop to continue to move forward, you know, the voices in the room definitely need to be, you know, women voices as well, so we can get perspectives from everybody.
Mm-hmm. And I just think that, like, again, like when it comes to like Meg, I think the first song that I heard of hers that I was really like, oh, who is this? Was mm-hmm. probably, do you watch this? Did you ever watch Black Lady Sketch Show?
Can yes.
you hear me? Oh, okay. So like the first season, her yeah, song I was, I think, yeah, the first season, her song was the opener. And I was like, oh, I feel like I had heard her before that, mm-hmm. but that's the one that really stuck in my, and so I looked her up. Like, it's that easy for me. And I listened to her catalog, mm-hmm. and all of, you know, like some of her early stuff, like I liked it, but I just feel like she finally grew into that person. And then she started having all this drama, not necessarily even the drama with what's his name, but just like other drama
about her record label
yeah. and, you know, her friends mm-hmm. and all this stuff. Like her latest album, Trauma Zine, like that, to me, that shit went because of the simple fact that she told a story.
Mm-hmm.
She told a story about all these things that we knew or we didn't know were going on, you know what I'm saying? And you know, I just think that she did a great job of it, because, and it was more about her than it was about them. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
So
mm-hmm. that makes a difference.
I just think, yeah, it was so much more about her. And like she take her shots. She always gonna take her shots, because she gonna let them know, like, you hoes are not, you know, you're not what you say you are. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've lived through this, I can see this, I see what you're doing. Like, it just I just think that she just does a great, I think she's a great lyricist. Like, I can't express it enough, because there's some people that just are not. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, they might have, and that's just being real. Like, when you think about a lyricist, when you think about people literally building bars and then spitting them,
yep.
Like, there's a whole lot that goes into that. And everybody doesn't have that whole thing. And I just feel like Meg does, on top of, you know, her having mass sex appeal. So she mm-hmm. got a fat ass. She shake it like she, you know yep. what I'm saying? It just is. And she always has. So, I mean, it just it's just a part of her thing. Right. So. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that's my opinion on it. I think that for women my age, you know, who are enjoying these, like, I call them ratchet, like my ratchet playlist. The playlist is called Period, but you know, like Ratchet, I call it my Ratchet playlist. For those of us who enjoy it, I think it just kind of brings us back to
playlist.
Yeah, I think it just kind of brings us back to, like, you know, Trina days and Lil Kim days, and you know, even, and you know, Luke is not a woman, but even like Luke, you know what I mean? It brings us back to
mm-hmm.
just us mm-hmm. when we were dancing and having a good time, and you know, just being able to talk our good shit. Time. So that's how I feel about it. And I think when you have the talk with your daughter, I think it'll go just fine. You're right. She probably is already listening to these songs. And as long as she knows that, you know, anything that you see on television, that you hear on the radio, that you see on Instagram or any social media, it's all entertainment. For a long mm-hmm. time, there were people doing skits, and we all thought that it was real stuff. Man, you know what please. I'm saying?
I when Eazy-E said he shot somebody, I thought he really did shoot somebody.
You know what I'm saying? Like, all of this stuff is just really, really entertainment. There's plenty of rappers who swear up and down they was out doing selling crack and all this stuff. They wasn't doing that.
They did shit.
So, you know, it just is what it is. But I know it's getting late, and I just want to say thank you so much for coming on and doing the 50 years of hip hop anniversary. I have had you in mind for a long time to do this, and I felt like you were the perfect person to do it. So I want you to tell the folks who are listening how they can find you and just a little bit about your podcast, just in case. I mean, I'm pretty sure they all have heard this before because they've listened to my podcast with you on it. They better had, but just in case they might've forgot.
You can find me on christianmingle.com.
What's your name on there? Please, please give me a screen name. Please. Please.
Let me stop playing. Well, thanks again, Autumn. I mean, this has always been fun. You can check out the 12 Kyle podcast. The podcast drops every Thursday at midnight. From time to time, we drop bonus episodes on Sundays at midnight. What I talk about is like just different things. I mean, like, obviously music comes up sometimes, sports, not a lot of sports, but just really talking about my life and just talking about growing up in the era without the internet. So the thing I always say about the podcast, and then I have a YouTube channel too, so you can watch each episode as well. The thing I always say about the episodes, you know, if you listen to one, you'll listen to another. I can guarantee you that. I have a good time. I like having people on. I actually have a idea, and we can talk about it off air. Well, no, I can talk to you about it now. I want to definitely get you back on the podcast, and we're going to do a what we call it, the big three. We call it three-peat Jodeci. So we take three of Jodeci's out.
I know that's
right up your wheelhouse. So absolutely. So we'll work that out. But always good to be here, man. Like I said, When you sent me the email, I was like, I was happy. I was like, yeah, I can't wait to get on here and talk hip hop. And you had some great questions too. You had me like really thinking over here.
Made you think. And, good.
But yeah, anybody, but check me out. Check the podcast out if you want to follow me on socials. It's 12 Kyle across the board. And I'll be around.
All right. Well, I appreciate you. And to everyone that came and listened to the podcast or watching the podcast, I appreciate you. If you're here, you know where to find me. So I expect to see you here next week. So until you hear me or see me again, peace.
5,000.